Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We want to start today with a conversation about gang life and leaving gangs in Boston. It is a complicated issue with a lot of ground to cover, so we are going to dive right in. To do that, we're joined in studio by Talia Rivera. She's a Boston native that has founded and worked for a number of nonprofits focused on dealing with gang involvement in the city. Talia, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
Also here with us is Mark Culleton, CEO of College Bound Dorchester, which runs Boston Uncornered, a program that provides guidance, mental health supports, and financial assistance for gang members to go to college. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks for having us.
It's good to have you here. Talia, I'm going to start with you. You've done a lot of work dealing with both youth violence and gang intervention. You co-founded Villages Without Walls. You've done work brokering truces between gangs. Can you tell us a bit about the current state of gang activity in Boston? Are things getting better or worse?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends. I think it depends on who you ask. I sat in the mayor's summer safety meeting that happened a few weeks back. And some of the data that they shared is that the violence that's happening, most of the perpetrators and some of the victims are not young people, right? So they're not this 15 to 18-year-old anymore. It's more so adults in their late 20s to early 30s.
Interesting.
So when you see that data, you think, well, something's working, right? That you don't see children, teenagers anymore as active. But I think it looks different. I haven't been on the ground in a little while. Mm-hmm. So when I was on the ground, it was very visible. Guys on corners, hanging out. Now it's a lot more sporadic, right? It's all over the place. It's not like defined or confined to a corner anymore. So if I happen to see you and I'm from H Block and you happen to be in Lynn, right, living mm-hmm. with your baby's mom, I'm going to get you out there. So I think it's just a lot more spread out. So it looks a little different and a little harder to contain.
Less concentrated, less more pervasive.
Yeah.
So maybe a little harder to visually identify.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. So if you've got older young men that are engaged,
yep.
that's a trajectory of life where gang activity has been part of their lives for a while. What does it take to truly change the trajectory of the life of a young person who's been that deeply involved for that kind yeah. of time?
Investments, I think.
What kind of investments?
Opportunities, opening doors for them, whether that be employment, whether that's through education. But figuring out ways to create spaces for them to do something different. Mm-hmm. You see programs like College Bound Dorchester, Inner City Weightlifting, that are doing phenomenal work, opening doors for young people who typically would not be in college and or personal trainers. So I think it's creating opportunities for them.
In college being College Bound Dorchester,
absolutely.
Personal trainers being inner city
weightlifting.
This is a great place to bring you in, Mark. College Bound Dorchester's been running this Boston Uncornered program for about 3 years. How did you decide that this was the best approach? You picked a very specific approach here, combining education and financial assistance. How'd you get there?
Really by trying to answer the question of how can you use education as a means to transform community. So we invest in gang-involved young people and adults because we love them and know that they can and will be great, but more importantly, what they can do for the community. I think we've done great things in the city of Boston in terms of combating gang violence and working with the city, with the police department, community groups, certainly have informed the nation. But still, every year there are about 200 shootings, about 50 homicides in this very small group of 3,500 individuals, maybe 1,200 families.
Out of a population of, what, 600,000 people in the city of Boston.
But, so you have to think of that, those shootings reverberating throughout that, really, like you think of a 3,500-person small town in Western Massachusetts, there were 200 shootings, it would be an endemic problem. That's happening sort of under the radar in Boston. And these guys don't want to be in it. These men and women want a way out. As Talia said, you want to get close to them and give them opportunity. And when you do that, they choose to do different things. More often than not, you're born into a gang. You're born into a gang lifestyle. And if given an opportunity, if we have the courage as a city, as individuals, to get close to, love, and support these young people, they will change, and that will change our city.
So, Mark, both of you have said, okay, open doors, create opportunity. Young people who are gang involved will want to walk through. Yet we also know PTSD, trauma, maybe low school attendance, truancy, family tragedy and abuse. We know that these can be characteristics of young people who are gang involved. So what challenges do you face when you bring a young person into the program? There have got to be social emotional needs, educational readiness questions, et cetera.
Yeah. So one thing I will say is we have never in the history of College Bound or Boston Uncornered have had a young person who's not been able to make it because of academic issues. Smart,
capable. I got to tell you, I'm surprised about that. And not because I don't believe in the population, but because so many other programs, I mean, even adult basic education programs I used to be engaged in, readiness was always an issue. So is it because of who you're picking?
Well, it's because we go after the most influential gang leaders in the city intentionally because of their impact on their crews and therefore the city.
And are they the ones you're extracting, or are you talking peripheral players go?
Well, that's the ones that we're focused on, that we're stipending because of their impact on their crew. These tend to be, many of them dropped out at 16 or 15 and have a ninth grade education, but incredibly bright, hardworking, driven individuals that they need a lot of academic support, but there's a lot of post-secondary pathways where they can excel, and they do excel. The biggest challenge is obviously, I think, and Talia probably is far more knowledgeable than me on
Talia,
this.
Talia, just so you know.
Talia, sorry.
Okay. No problem.
I keep saying Talia, sorry. Okay. That's my French pronunciation. I'm going with it. Is this idea of trust and being vulnerable and asking for help. And so if you can get young people to that place or gang-involved young people to have a little bit of trust, have a little bit of ability to show vulnerability, to ask for help, they can do anything. And that's the heart of the problem. And you have to build a model and support system that acknowledges that they will fail multiple times on the path to trust. And you can't, you have to have super high expectations and super low requirements. Any requirements will be failed and they'll be kicked out. But since our nexus is community change, we keep them in, and many of the best programs do exactly that same thing.
Yeah, Greg Croteau from UTEC, you'll hear him say, we're not a second chance organization, we're an eighth, ninth, tenth chance organization.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I've got a person we want to bring in on the phone in just a minute, but first, Talia, I'm going to come back to you for a second. Traditionally, people who do outreach with gangs are called street workers, and Mark has talked about this really important factor of trust. Yep. So how does one build trust in street work?
Yeah. This is so simple but profound. I mean, the way that I did that is I would show up to the neighborhood where I was assigned, and I would say, hey, what's up? I'm a street worker. How you doing? If you need anything, let me know. And I'll walk away, but I come back the next day and the next day and the next day and the next day until they say, you know what? Actually, I'm going to court. Do you think that you can come with me?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just being consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
And really, how many next days are we talking about?
Lots of next days.
Yeah.
Sometimes
yeah.
It depends. Sometimes 30, you know, sometimes
yeah.
40.
Yeah. I want to bring another voice in on this. Joining us now on the line is Michal Chamberlain. He's the Massachusetts president of Bank of America. Michal, you guys have been financial partners in this program. First, let me just welcome you. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me, Tiziana.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was cranking. I jumped right in on a question, but I did want to say
hello. No problem.
I want to start by asking you about Boston's approach in dealing with gang activity, gang violence, gang involvement. What do you feel needs to change either in our attitudes or our policy approach in order to make real progress?
Well, look, I think it's up to the business community to roll up their sleeves and get involved in any way they can to help these organizations that are focusing on this population that, frankly, you know, the city needs as to be productive members of our society. I mean, if you look at the unemployment rate here in Boston, being now under 3%, and when I sit around board tables with other CEOs and presidents, we're all longing for a more diverse talent pool, and it's certainly right here in our community. So for us, you know, we think partnering with an organization like College Bound Dorchester, it gives these kids an opportunity to get off the street, to get educated, and again, get on the pathway to economic success. And that's money well spent and time well spent for our organization.
So, Michal, you talked about it's important for all businesses to roll up their sleeves and get involved. You know, we know the arc of corporate social responsibility investments, and one of the first things that is necessary is brand return. So given that, and, you know, Bank of America's interest as a financial institution in the city, what makes Boston Uncornered a good investment for you?
Well, look, I think we all as business people also want a return on that investment, that ROI. And when you go through the results that Mark and his team are putting up, I think it's pretty impressive. I mean, the one that jumped off the page to us right away was really, if you look at formerly gang-involved youth associated with Boston Uncornered, they're matriculating to college at a 70% ratio or 70% rate, as opposed to the national average of this population of just 1%. So if we can impact, again, the highest impact people in these gangs, the core influencers, if we can get them off the streets and get some of their friends to follow, ultimately, you know, that number of 70% is only going to get higher. So you're three years into a program. We think as more people come through this program, it has the opportunity really to have a bit of a domino effect, and people will see the success that these young core influencers are having, no longer on the streets, but in boardrooms and in companies around the city.
Michal, I'm going to ask you one more question, only because we've got so many topics I want to make sure we get in here. Reverend Eugene Rivers, who is a co-founder of the Boston 10-Point Coalition, was asked about the dip in crime rates last year, and he told The Globe that Boston is morphing into a boutique town, saying that part of the decrease in crime comes from gentrification. He says crime will decline because numbers of the poor will decline. How is Bank of America thinking about this question of gentrification in the city and the changing demographics of the city as you guys think about how to invest?
Yeah, look, I'd answer it like this, Tiziana. You know, we have a third of our financial centers in LMI neighborhoods. And if you look at whether it be in Dorchester, Mattapan, et cetera, Codman Square, we have recently remodeled some of these branches because we think it's important to help people in these communities develop the credit score, learn how to manage their money through our program called Better Money Habits. And for us, if we make these investments, this isn't about gentrification. It's about putting people on a pathway to success. And if they do it via education, that's the place we think it starts. And that's why we continue to invest in College Bound Dorchester and other organizations like it.
That's Michal Chamberlain, Massachusetts President of Bank of America. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Mark, I want to hear now, I've got some tape from one of your college readiness advisors. We spoke earlier with Elias Perea. He's 41 years old, a former gang member, and he talked with me about how his own history actually makes it possible for him to connect with the program's participants in a meaningful way.
I know I could work with these people, like, you know what I mean, the students that I work with in the community, because I came from the community. And it's hard to leave the community because everybody's around you. There's a lot of friends, old friends are still gang involved. A lot of family members that I know that, you know, they were gang involved. But, you know, they're around, but they're happy that I make a change, you know.
When you bring a young person who is gang involved into the program, what is their reaction like at first, and does it change over time?
Well, a lot of it comes with their mindset and their willingness and their readiness, like, how, for instance, they grow out of it, either their age or some of them just are confused and scared of the new challenge. And that's the face of that, you know, I try to like to work with them on that, you know.
What do you think is kind of the most important support that they need during that time of fear and transition? What do you really focus on making sure you're providing them?
Well, one of is the trust and their safety, you know, that's the most important.
You come from a life where you were involved in a gang. You come from the community that you serve now. How important is that credibility to your ability to do the work and to connect with young people and invite them to different choices in their lives?
That comes from, you know, just, like I said, the trust, and they know that I have a background like that, and that I made a change, that they look up to people that, you know, like, okay, for instance, that they made it, you know what I mean? Like, they want to make it too. So some people don't have nobody like a mentor or nobody to look up to say, oh, yo, show me a way, and that's what I'm here for.
When you were a really young man, if somebody had approached you and been able to convince you to make a change sooner than you did, what would you needed to have heard, and what would they need to have been able to tell you for you to make that change sooner than you did?
Like our students now, it is the financial problem a lot. And like nobody ever came at me like, yo, we'll help you out on the financial part. And that's where we come in. And the support, like they're constantly on like being on their back or on my back. I would appreciate it, you know, showing that effort, that love. You know?
Mm-hmm. And Elias, one last question. If there happens to be a young person who's gang involved, who's listening to you right now, what's the one most important thing you'd say to them?
That there's more than life than a gang. You know what I mean? I mean, I know that you try to say like, okay, this is my family. This is all I know, but there is more. There's, you know, you can travel, you know, you can be a leader to your family, be a leader to your community. And that's it. There's more to life.
Talia, you reacted. I saw you react so strongly when he talked about the financial component. Yeah. What was on your mind? What were you thinking?
Yeah, I was thinking, I wish somebody would pay me to go to school. I probably would have graduated.
Right?
Yeah. No,
that's what the data says.
Yeah, it's important. I mean, I feel like for me, you know, growing up in a household with a mom who was addicted to crack, I had to figure out how to fend for myself, right? So I decided to sell drugs. But if there were programs like College Bound Dorchester or an opportunity like Villages Without Walls that said, hey, let me hire you to be a community organizer and pay you, I would have been all over that.
So, Mark, you know, I got to believe there are people who are skeptical about the payment thing.
Yep.
So, I mean, obviously, Talia has just handed you another great argument.
Right.
But what is the case that you make? Because we know this, people are very skeptical about the idea that you put payment directly into the hands of young people who are struggling with poverty, criminal justice, et cetera.
Right. Well, the first thing I say to those folks who have real questions about that is that we currently spend in the Commonwealth $100,000 per gang member per year. So we're paying them already. We're paying them for police, for the courts, for incarceration. So we're already spending a significant investment, $100,000, and that $100,000 buys another $100,000. Over the course of a lifetime, a gang member will cost the Commonwealth $1 million. So we're talking about a third of that. That changes them immediately from a negative force to a positive force in their community.
So let me tell you the thing, though, that's floating. I got to tell you the thing that's niggling at
me. Go for it.
I know that a lot of the young men in the program are going into community college.
Yep.
In the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, Ed Reform Now has some data that says that at best, black students in community college in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts have a 15% graduation rate in 3 years.
Yep.
Are we saddling these young men with student debt, student obligations, and low performance rates because of the systemic issues in our community college system? You got great numbers of them going in, but what about coming out? You
yep.
know that's a concern.
Yeah, so we have a 70% retention rate, and that travels through to graduation, too.
I mean, you're getting early. 70%
yep.
graduating
yep,
over
exactly.
what period of time?
Over 3 years.
That's
over
a striking number.
Yeah, it's striking. But we're investing because when they go to community colleges, their mentor goes with them. So it's not the community college system has resources, has advisors, has tutoring. The problem is that the ones that need it don't take advantage of it. And the ones that take advantage of it don't necessarily need it. So for that 15%, the community colleges work. The challenge is the ones that get there and don't have direction, advice, guidance to get to those resources, struggle, and fail out. And so what we've said is that we have to go with our young people. We have to take them to tutoring. We have to take them and make sure they're in front of the right professors that really care and understand them. So our rates are significantly higher than national rates for college going in general because we're investing in staying close. And that trust thing, they trust these guys, so they'll ask for help. They won't ask for help from a stranger because you don't want to be vulnerable.
To a stranger.
Yeah. I mean, this is not a skill.
So I want to get one last very short, like 20-second question into Leah. Yep. This is all reaction to young men already in gangs. What's the big prevention lever?
The big prevention lever?
How do we prevent them from getting involved in the first place?
Opportunities.
Yeah. Economic, yeah. Educational.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And on that note, that is Mark Culleton, CEO of College Bound Dorchester. Mark, I appreciate you coming in today.
Thank you so much.
And to Leah Rivera, a Boston native who has founded and worked for a number of nonprofits focused on dealing with gang involvement in the city. To Leah, thanks so much to you as
well. Thank you.
All right. Stay with us. Coming up, Nancy Gertner joins us to talk about the implications of two major Supreme Court cases. I'm Tiziana Deering, and this is Radio Boston.